Blog Talk Radio.
Now tuned in to OPM Live, where the ordinary is the extraordinary. I am your host, Verna V. Nickelberry, and tonight on the line we have a wonderful author by the name of David Check, and he is the author of Got Passion. And how are you today, sir?
I am doing well, Verna. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's definitely an honor to have you on our show today. Mr. Check, if you don't mind telling our listening audience a little bit about yourself and what you got going on, and what do you have going on, and about your book, Got Passion, and how did you come up with that title? I know that's a lot all in one sentence.
Well, thank you for asking, Verna. And let me just start out by saying, first of all, the last name is Cheek, like the side of your face.
Oh, Cheek. Okay.
But that's quite all right. I will answer to just about anything. First of all, on a personal note, you know, I'm married and I have three kids. My kids are older now. They're 22, 19, and 15. And I jokingly say that's the reason why I have no hair, is because of raising three children. But in reality, my first job more than anything else is that of being a husband and that of being a dad. I've spent probably 30-plus years in the corporate world. The last 7 or 8 of those have been vice president of sales for a couple of big Fortune 100 companies. I'm currently a financial advisor with Edward Jones for the last almost 2 years now, and I love what I do. I have passion for what I do. But like I said, my job first and foremost is that of being a spouse, a husband, and a dad to my three kids. As far as the book is concerned, it's a long story. I'll keep it brief. I have always been kind of a motivational guy, a very positive attitude guy, someone who looks at a glass as being half full and not half empty, always looking on the bright side of things because I think that's the way God wired us. And many years ago, probably 7 or 8 years ago, I was asked to speak to a company that I work for. What they called the all-associate meeting, and I had no idea what I was going to talk on. In fact, I was kind of curious why I was asked to speak. And so the person who asked me to speak said, well, you're kind of a motivational, very uplifting, very positive kind of guy, and that's the kind of speech we need right now with our company. And I said, okay, well, let me ask you a couple of questions. What is the culture at the home office? What is the general attitude of everyone, especially with the industry going through what they're going through? And this was a health insurance company, and this was long before what we call Obamacare now. So there was a lot of challenges in that industry. And I came up with the idea of putting together a speech on passion because I felt like that was lacking, not only with the company I was with, but unfortunately, Verna, I think it's lacking in many people today in their jobs or vocation, in their personal lives with their spouse and kids, in their ministry work, in their volunteer work. I just think passion is lacking. I think so many people just go through the motions, doing what's expected, no more, no less, and they're lacking that fire in their belly. And so that was the situation at that particular company I felt. And so I took the word passion and I used it as an acrostic, and I came up with a speech on passion, how to find it, how to keep it, how to nurture it, how to grow it, and how it applies to our everyday life. And it was so successful. I've probably given that speech 200 times. After 2 or 3 years, someone said, you know, you ought to write a book about that. and voila, I have a book about it.
Wow. It's so crucial, I would think, that no matter what it is that we're doing, we have to have a passion for it. Otherwise, it's not going to last. It will not last long. I would always tell my children, if you're going to, whatever you decide to do, make sure you enjoy doing it and you're not doing it for the money. Because if you're doing it, if you're working in something that you really don't like, but you like what it pays, then you're not going to like it. But if you do something that you enjoy doing, then the pay won't really matter. Not as much, I think, because you enjoy doing it.
Oh, Verna, you are so right, and I'll give you a quick example of that. My son just turned 19 years of age this past October. He graduated from high school last year, and midway through his junior year in high school, we started taking college visits where, you know, a lot of parents do that about the junior, senior year. And my son and I went out, and we visited about three different universities because he thought about maybe going into engineering or architectural design, something like that, because that seemed to be what he was interested in. And so we identified three schools, and we went out, and we did our touring. And I remember after the third college we visited, he put his arm around me, and he says, "Dad, I love you, and I really have enjoyed these college visits and the male bonding and stuff." He says, "But you know, Dad, I've always wanted to be a firefighter." And I kind of looked around and thinking, where did that come from? And I said, and my son is 6'4" tall, and I'm 6'2", so I kind of look up at him and I said, "Son, I remember when you were about yay high," and I put my hand out about 4 feet from the ground. I said, "I remember when you were about yay high, you wanted to be a firefighter, but I hadn't heard anything in like 4, 5, 6 years. And he said something, Verna, that I think every parent would love to hear at some point. He said, "Dad, you always taught us kids to go for what we love to do, go for what we have passion for. That if we're going to work 8-10 hours a day at a job, we're going to do it because we love it, not for the money," as you so apropos said earlier. and of course, as a dad, I'm beaming from ear to ear, and I'm thinking to myself, you mean all those conversations and little things that I mentioned actually resonated with my kids? And so it was very special when he said that. And so guess what he's doing now? He's studying to be a firefighter, something that he has passion for.
And that's so important, no matter what it is, even in our ministry. I think if you don't have passion for your ministry, it won't last. I wholeheartedly would tell anyone, do what you love doing, no matter what it is. If you enjoy doing it, it's like at the end of the day, you feel so fulfilled by doing it, because that's what you enjoy doing. Now, in your book, Got Passion, what is it that you normally, or what in your book, what is it you tell your readers when it comes to their passion or getting to know their passion or discovering what their passion is? How do you lead them into finding their passion?
Well, I think first of all, we have to define what passion is. And the way I define it in my book is passion is a compelling, intense feeling or emotion. Now, I could probably stop right there. In fact, I talk about this in the book. I could probably stop right there because that in itself is a pretty good definition of passion, a compelling, intense feeling or emotion. But it goes farther than that. It's also love. It's also ardent affection, amorous or avid desire. I even throw in the word lust, zeal, the subject of an engrossing pursuit. So I think first and foremost, you have to understand what passion really is. A good friend of mine who's also a motivational speaker, she defines it as the fire in your belly. Her name is Marcia Weeder, and she defines it as the fire in your belly. It is when you are compelled to action. And again, whether it's your marriage, whether it's your ministry, whether it's your job or vocation, if you don't, number one, enjoy, and then let's talk about job or vocation, because I think if you're going to spend 8 or 10 hours a day doing something, you better have passion for what you're doing. In fact, I tell my audiences many times, if you don't have passion for what you're doing, do yourself, do your family, do your employer a favor and get out. Find something mm-hmm. that you are passionate
Absolutely.
About. You know?
Absolutely.
Find something that is that fire in your belly. It's that juice that helps you move mountains to accomplish your dreams and goals, both personally and professionally. And when it comes to that passion and your job or vocation, yeah, if you don't have that fire, get out and do something else. Now, unfortunately, and you and I both know this, and your audience knows this, sometimes you don't have a choice. You got to be where you are. You got to pay the bills, and that's understandable. But you can also find that passion if you're stuck in a – and I don't want to say you're stuck in a job or you're stuck in a rut, but if you're at a job that you have to be there because that's the only thing you can do at this time, you can find passion. You can create passion to do that. And how do you do that? Someone said – me one time or asked me one time, David, I'm an administrative assistant. How or I'm a receptionist or I'm a teller in a bank, you know, kind of what a lot of people would consider menial jobs. And I think every job's important. How do you find passion for something like that? How do you find passion if you're a maintenance worker? How do you find passion if you're a janitor? How do you find passion? The way you find passion is to be the very best janitor anyone has ever seen.
That's it.
Be the best you can do. Do the very best job you can do, if not better than that. And then you'll be successful, not only with that career, but you'll be successful in your heart because you're giving the very best. And isn't that really what God created us to do? Again, whether it's in ministry or whether it's in outside of the ministry, the idea is we are to give 110% of everything we do. And that's really how you find that passion for what you're doing, is to give everything you've got. I would like to touch on real quick, Verna, how important passion is in a marriage or any relationship. You know, I say something in the book which is kind of interesting. I start the book out this way, and I say, if I, a total stranger, were sitting next to you at a restaurant, let's say one table over, and could I tell as a total stranger by the way you're interacting with your spouse, and let's just say spouse for right now, could I tell by the way you interact, the words that come out of your mouth, your nonverbal communication, could I tell by your demeanor that you are passionately in love with this person? Now, there's no question you may love this person, but can I tell as a total stranger, just by the way you are acting and talking and looking and, again, your demeanor, that you have passion for this person? And in most cases, it's shameful, but in most cases, you can't tell that. And I think that's where we need to start, is at home, is with our spouses.
So if you saw a couple in public and you're like maybe wondering about that passion in that particular relationship, will a touch give you that indication that perhaps there is some type of passion, or would that just be an affectionate touch or that's just what they do as a couple, maybe with no looking the person in the eye or any kind of interaction that way, but just a simple touch on the hand or touch on the shoulder or maybe a touch on the cheek, would that be identified as having some type of passion there?
Yes and no. I can kind of equate that. I can answer that by giving you an example in my own family. I've been married over 20 years, and I have a great chapter in the book, by the way, which I'll tell you about in just a moment, Val. But using my own life as an example, I'm a very affectionate guy, so I like to hold my wife's hand. If I'm sitting next to her on the couch, just put my hand on her leg, just that physical touch. I'm just a physical touch kind of guy. That's my love language, if you will. And when we've had a disagreement or an argument, and we're out going to a restaurant or we're going to the mall or whatever, I still want to hold her hand. But you can tell, or at least she can tell, if I'm just doing it out of because that's the way I like to be. I like to be physical with her, you know, by holding her hand, versus I hold her hand a different way, more gentle way, more loving way, more. So if we haven't had an argument, if we haven't had a disagreement. So I guess in answer to your question, yes, you can look at someone at a dinner table and just by the way they're touching or the way they're looking, you can tell just by looking in their eyes. You know, I like to equate someone who's dating or maybe in their first year of marriage to someone who's been married like myself over 20 years, which is really a good segue to this chapter that I was mentioning earlier. There's a chapter in the book, dear, dear friend of mine, and I reference him in the book. His name is Pat Curl, and Pat and I have been friends for a long time. He used to be one of my salespeople when I was in the insurance business, and I went to his dad's funeral. He passed away at the age of 95, and I went to his funeral, and I remember the preacher looked at his wife and repeated three times, 75 years, and then he said to her, "Do you realize that you were married to Pat Curl Sr. longer than most of us will ever live?" He died 6 months after their 75th wedding anniversary. And she died about a year and a half later. And I asked Pat Curl Jr., I said, "Pat, do you mind if I ask you a few questions about the relationship that your mom and dad had with each other? Because for someone to be married 75 years, there's a lot of stuff going on, as you know, Verna, but there's also some passion in there." And he shared with me something that I think in their 12th or 13th year of marriage that he was still physically writing love letters to his wife, and she to him. And I looked at myself in the mirror, and I said, "You know what? I've been married 15 years, and I couldn't tell you the last time I wrote a physical love letter to my wife."
I think the art of writing letters has pretty much diminished quite a bit.
I think you're right.
I try occasionally to write a letter to my grandchildren, but I can honestly say I have failed at that. But this is going to give me new hope and to keep it up at least once in a while, write them a small letter. That's a very good thing to do.
Well, you know as well as I do, you know, anything that you, it's the little things that matter in not just relationships, but it's the little things that matter. I know I have two daughters, and I still go out. I still have daddy-daughter dates with them, my 22-year-old and my 15-year-old, and that means so much to them. I still do things with my son. I try to do something at least once a week, you know, what we call male bonding time. We don't call it a date, but it's male bonding time. And those little things mean a lot. And in a marriage or relationship, yeah, it may not have to be a physical or a handwritten letter, even though that means so much nowadays because most people don't do it. But it could be something more than a phone call in the middle of the day, a text, an email, thinking of you, just wanted to tell you that I love you, can't wait to see you tonight when I get home. Those little things, and I know there's some men that are listening to your show. Don't wait until Valentine's Day or Mother's Day to send them flowers, okay? It's okay to send flowers for no reason.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, you are on to something right there. It is okay, coming from a lady, a woman. It is okay to just envy. You know, just like mothers, we get so excited when our those who have boys, they come in with those weeds, those dandelions, and it's like such a beam on their face when they bring you that weed. It's all yellow, but it's like, "I got a flower for you."
Mm-hmm.
I know I have two sons. I don't have any daughters. So I have gotten those weeds. You know, "I got a flower for you." And they are so happy. But it's so cute when they bring it. It's like an offering, so to speak. But those weeds, I have saved. I think I saved a few of them until I got ready to downsize and threw them away. But I saved them for a very long time in a book of some sort. But you're absolutely right. Don't have to wait until Valentine's Day.
Well, can I mention one other thing about Pat Curl Sr. and his wife? Her name was Callie, by the way. And when she passed away, like I said, about a year and a half after her late husband passed away. This was what was printed in her obituary. United in marriage, October 12, 1930 to January 16, 2006. Again, that's 75 years. And then it says underneath that, United in heaven, July 23rd, 2007. And underneath that it says eternity. The idea, of course, was the first one was when he passed away. The second one was when she passed away. I thought that was just kind of cool. And I appreciate Pat Curl Jr. for sharing their story with me.
That is so cool. That is absolutely awesome to be married for 75 years to the same person. That's beautiful.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Cheek, David Cheek, it has definitely been a pleasure having you on OPM Live Blog Talk Radio and giving us those great examples of passion and those examples of marriage, passion within a marriage or just in a relationship. We thank you for that.
You are very welcome. I've enjoyed it.
Okay. And do you have any last thing, any last words that you would like to share with our listening audience, how they can connect with you, how they can get your book, or how they can contact you? You can do that at this time.
Well, thank you so much. My book is, of course, on Amazon.com. My website, passionwithattitude.com, they can find it there. Probably the best way to reach me, because I'm a very one-on-one personal guy, is just to reach out to me via email. And if I may give that email address, it's davidmcheek@yahoo.com. And because I love to respond back to people and their messages, I love to hear stories about passion in their life, and they can just order books that way. But more than anything else, I just love that one-on-one interaction. So, yeah, davidmcheek@yahoo.com or passionwithattitude.com.
Great, great. And then you can also tell your friends, relatives, they can go back and listen to this show in our archives, and it's OPM Live Blog Talk Radio. They can go back and listen to the show if they so choose. And once again, we thank you so very much for being a part of OPM Live Blog Talk Radio. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much for having me. And I just feel like I know you just in the few minutes we've had a chance to talk today. So thank you again. And if I can ever answer any questions from you or your listening audience, please have them reach out to me.
Most definitely will do. Thank you again.
Thank you.
This has been OPM Live Blog Talk Radio, where the ordinary is the extraordinary. I am your host, Verna V. Nickelberry, and we would like to thank our sponsors, Crevolution Arts, T&D Marketing and Management, Southern Eagle Music Group. Thank you so very much for your sponsorship. And again, OPM Live Blog Talk Radio, leaving you with this coming from Psalm 118, verse 21. I will praise thee, for thou hast heard me, and art become my salvation. Verse 22, the stone which the builders refused is become the headstone of the corner. In closing with Change Is Gonna Come by saxophonist Crystal Brown.